So good evening, members. This is Chair Moran. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call the remote meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee to order. Ms. Sparkman, will you please take the roll?
Chair Moran?
Present.
Moran, present. Vice Chair Olson?
Present.
Olson, present. Representative Garofalo?
Garofalo, present.
Garofalo, present. Representative Albright?
Present.
Albright, present. Representative Becker Finn?
Becker Finn, present.
Becker Finn, present. Representative Bernardi?
Present.
Bernardi, present. Representative Eklund?
Present.
Eklund, present. Representative Hansen?
Present.
Hansen, present. Representative Hassan?
Present.
Hassan, present. Representative Hurtas?
Hurtas, present. Sharing a computer.
Hurtas, present. Representative Hornstein?
Present.
Hornstein, present. Representative Johnson?
Johnson, present.
Johnson, present. Representative Kreisha?
Present.
Kreisha, present. Representative Liebling, excused. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, present.
Lilly, present. Representative Mariani? Representative Mariani? Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, present.
Marquardt, present. Representative Miller?
Miller, present.
Miller, present. Representative Nash?
Nash, present.
Nash, present. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, present.
Nelson, present. Representative Noor?
Noor, present.
Noor, present. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, present.
O'Neill, present. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, present.
Pawlowski, present. Representative Petersburg?
Petersburg, present.
Petersburg, present. Representative Pinto?
Pinto, present.
Pinto, present. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, present.
Schumacher, present. Representative Schultz?
Schultz, present.
Schultz, present. Representative Scott?
Scott, present.
Scott, present. Representative Sundin?
Sundin, present.
Sundin, present. Representative Mariani? That concludes the roll. There is a quorum present.
Great. So a quorum is present. And our first agenda item is approval of the minutes from our hearing on Monday, June the 14th. The minutes were included in the hearing documents emailed to you by committee staff. Are there any questions or corrections to the minutes? Vice Chair Olson, we'd like to move approval of the minutes for June the 14th.
Yes, Madam Chair, I move approval of the minutes.
Okay, can we please mute briefly for a voice vote? All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Well, members, welcome back again. We have two more budget agreements to hear today. We will start with House File 1, which is the Jobs and Economic Development Omnibus. Chair Noor, do you have two amendments? And would you like to move your bill and then move your DE amendment so that Chair Eklund can tell us about his budget agreement?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I would like to start by moving House File 1 to be referred to the General Register, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Noor. Do you also have two amendments you'd like to move and explain?
Yes, Madam Chair, I do have D amendment A210221. I'd like to move that amendment, Madam Chair.
Yes, please. So move.
Madam Chair, I do have an amendment to the amendment A2, amendment to A210221.
Okay. And you're moving that one also?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Chair Noor, can you please explain the amendment to us?
Yes, Madam Chair. The A2 amendment is contains some technical changes to the reference of on the bill from 116L.42 to 116L.41. It also addresses an appropriation availability. That's the technical correction from the department. On the same amendment, Madam Chair and members, this includes the Reconnect Rondo, which is $6.2 million one-time appropriation to the Commission of Transportation available to match federal funds for planning and redesigning costs and project development for a land bridge freeway lead that will be on the Rondo. Madam Chair and members, as you're all aware of, Rondo was the heartbeat for the African-American community in St. Paul. When the I-94 was constructed, it displaced the community, the Black community there. They lost their properties, their homes, their businesses. This is an opportunity to heal and restore what was lost. It also contains $400,000 one-time appropriation pilot for the Career and Technical Educator Pilot Program. It also includes Oriented Strand Board Production Incentive Program. It appropriates $1.5 million in fiscal year 25 and $3 million for fiscal year 26 through 2034. Madam Chair and members, we do have nonpartisan staff if needed to explain further the amendment.
Thank you, Chair Nora. Members, are there any questions on the A2 amendment to the amendment?
Madam Chair, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's Representative Groff. I apologize. I'm on my phone, and I do not know how to raise my hand via the phone. Okay. So I don't mean to interrupt, but just whenever it's my turn to talk, let me know.
Okay. Why don't we go to Representative Petersburg?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this question is in regards to the Rondo Reconnect piece. As some of you may know, that was originally in the transportation bill come through the House, and it was negotiated. I think it was eliminated during negotiations between the Senate and the House. And I'm surprised to see it here. A couple of questions that I have is, How did it get here? I mean, how did it come from there when it hadn't really been heard in your committee? And also, does this impact the target? $6 million is a fair amount of money. So how did that all work out? How did we get the additional target, et cetera? Or how did you get the extra target for these dollars?
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Madam Chair. We're starting to forget the process now. Thank you, Representative Petersburg. I think this was negotiated as part of the global agreement with leadership as we were negotiating. And so the right place for this bill ended up in our budget. And also that changes the fiscal amount that was also negotiated for this budget.
And Representative Petersburg, let me also just share with you that the Rondo Land Bridge is will be in my district, be in the heart of my district. And, you know, it just really makes sense to be a part of jobs because what we are looking at is a piece of land that is over I-94 that will create jobs, right? It will, along with other, including housing, but economic development is really is a big part of what we hope to see as we begin to plan and develop the land bridge. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, you know, I kind of understand all of that. I've always had a little concern about how, whether or not that land bridge with 50 years since that was separated with the freeway, how the land bridge is actually going to bring us back to the past or back to what we were at before and how it will reparate, I suppose, the people are there because they're no longer there, the ones that lost their funding. So my just question is in regards to the full funding of the project after this, because this $6 million is just for the engineering, the development, and kind of the fundraising part of it. We still have to provide the funding, or somebody needs to, for the actual project, which I'm sure will be developed with this dollars, but $6 million is a lot of money that could go for a lot of other things as well. So I just have some concern that we are spending that kind of money for this particular project. Not that it's not a worthy project. We have so many other worthy projects as well. So that's my concern, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Petersburg, I you know, there are a lot of worthy projects some that have been funded and some that are not been funded. But this is a good investment. And what we have in St. Paul is generations of families. That is one of the things that I love about St. Paul. It is like, you know, to me, this little town where generations of families have, you know, just stayed here. And so what you have in St. Paul is generations of families who grandparents, who parents were displaced by I-94, who are still living in St. Paul. And so this bridge symbolized not just a bridge, but it symbolized the economic wealth that was lost. It is a part connecting our community back into one whole. And it's about restoring, you know, in a lot of ways, what was lost by the development of I-94 coming in and displacing homeowners. It was over 700 families lost their homes. There was over an abundance of jobs, you know, small businesses that were lost because of I-94. And most of it was done without anyone in the community even knowing about the process. So this land bridge doesn't just symbolize, you know, a piece of land that is reconnecting the Rondo community, right? But it's really about the healing piece of it, economic development, and it's about community.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just to not to debate that, because I think all those things have some value. The question is sometimes what we think is going to happen and what actually does happen could be different. And in this case, I'm afraid that I just think that there may be some other people that are going to get rich off of this program and the healing, whether it may be inspirational or not, may not be the final outcome of it. So. That's just my question, Madam Chair. That's all I have to say.
Representative Petersburg, I understand. I have those thoughts too often with projects that I see moving through this body or that has moved through this body. We really don't always know the outcome of it, but there are huge investments that we make because we believe in a project. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question is if this project is in now, what was eliminated or did the target go up? Thank you, Madam Chair.
I don't, Representative Noor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe the target from the global agreement went up. I would like to ask Ms. Bickle to, you know, give us a little bit of a background on that.
Okay. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Madam Chair, my name is Solve Beckel. I'm a nonpartisan fiscal analyst with House Fiscal. Yes, the target for the jobs omnibus was increased to accommodate for this amendment.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Were there any other additions that we should know about or that this fiscal analyst could bring to our attention that were either in the original and now out or just added to?
To the fiscal analysis?
Madam Chair, Representative, so it's just this amendment that has changed the target from what it was set at before. So that would be the Rondo program, the workforce career training program, and then the
the oriented strand board production incentive.
Yes, that's right. So those three items for which the target was increased.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll let my colleagues ask some more questions. Thank you.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Noor, for including this excellent project in your bill. And I just wanted to let the committee know I'm familiar with this project. I agree with everything that Chair Moran and Chair Noor have said about it. I will just add that there are a variety of funding sources envisioned, and there will be potentially federal money involved. The state share is really for planning, and we do this for any road and infrastructure project. You know, it starts with planning and the kinds of activities that Chair Neuer described. And I'll just end by saying that I have had a chance to tour this with people in the community, the area here. There's a commemorative plaza that I think everybody should take a look at that describes the history. But this is actually a forward-looking project. It's not, while it's informed by history, it's a forward-looking project, as Chair Moran said, and something that really stayed with me from the tour I took was that one of the folks from the Reconnect Rondo organization talked about youth, and that this is the kind of project that can give youth hope. And that's what this really is about. It's about jobs. It's about a new vision for a community. It's about housing. And so I think it is very appropriate that it's in this bill. And I strongly support it and would encourage everybody to vote for the amendment.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Albright.
This is a bit like a bill on a much larger purchase. And so at this current juncture, we differ from the
floor. Representative Albright, I'm sorry, but
what is the total investment that would be expected for this project?
Okay,
and Representative, what would you anticipate the project would be completed?
Representative Albright, it was very, very difficult to hear you. So can you please start over from the beginning with your question? We cannot hear you.
Sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
This question goes to either Representative Knorr or Representative Hornstein. And I'm looking at this $6.2 million as much like a down payment on a much larger purchase. So the question goes to the timeline in terms of when this project would be completed or actually in this point started. And understandably, it's originating in the jobs bill, which is Representative Knorr's domain, but it also has transportation functions. I'm wondering if this is candidly just a way to get it started and it will switch to transportation. So I'm wondering if there's a bit of a gray area here that we need to deal with. And I do have a follow-up, Madam Chair.
Okay. Who would like to respond to that? Would it be Chair Hornstein or Chair Neuer?
Just to start, Madam Chair, this is about economic development, as Chair Moran noted, and it also addresses transportation issues. So this is more about multi-jurisdiction. And quite frankly, this design and planning will start immediately in the fiscal year 22, and then the rest of the project will be coming in later. I just wanted to allow Chair Hornstein to give the issues that will be connected to the Transportation Department. Chair Hornstein can explain that, Madam Chair.
Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Neuer. And I completely concur with Chair Neuer on this. While this is a transportation issue in that there is interface with Interstate 94, it is at its core a community economic development project. Having said that, however, the Department of Transportation will be the lead agency at the state level. And as Chair Neuer said, it is multi-jurisdictional. They will be the fiscal agent, as it were, for any federal monies coming in. There's also envisioned private money. And this, because we're talking about around 11 acres of prime land in St. Paul, this will leverage a lot of additional investment. So this is not simply, you know, capital for an infrastructure project. It will repay the community in many, many ways, again, through housing, commercial activities, parks, et cetera. So, yes, it will be a this is the beginning, and it's a multi-year effort, obviously, with many different funding sources, and both the transportation and community economic development interface.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hornstein, Representative Knorr, certainly respect your comments, but you didn't answer my question. The question is, in Ways and Means, we ask questions regarding finances rather than feelings. And whether you want to coin this as an economic reparation bill or a economic development bill or a housing bill, it all revolves around who's going to pay. And as I have heard in other conversations, this is a multi-billion dollar project over substantial amount of time. What we are doing with this amendment is committing the state and the city of Minneapolis and the various communities and agencies to a number of legal battles that will ensue based upon this, and eminent domain is called into question, as well as any number of other legal mechanisms to facilitate this project being put in place. But my question, Representative Hornstein and Representative Zotnor, is what is the anticipated price tag for this as you know it today?
Madam Chair?
Representative Hornstein.
I'd be happy to take that question. Representative Albright, just to correct the record, it's a $478 million project, not a multi-billion dollar project. The state chair, at this point is a planning grant. It is in the city of St. Paul. You had mentioned Minneapolis. It's the city of St. Paul. So I wanted the record corrected on both of those. And, you know, there are land bridges around the state already that are similar in concept. There's one in Duluth. There is the Lowry Tunnel along I-94 is a similar concept. There are land bridges similar to this around the country, in Dallas, for example. And this is, it is a forward-looking project, and it is innovative and important to not only just the city of St. Paul, but the state of Minnesota in terms of the kinds of investment it's going to leverage. Every major infrastructure project starts like this, roads in all of our districts, transit projects in all of our districts start with a planning proposal. And so that's what this is. So I want those facts on the record, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. And Representative Albright, may I say that no one is using the words reparations for this, but we are talking about job creation. We are talking about wealth development in a community. We are talking about bridging the two communities together. This is an initiative that is not just done along with the Rondo Plaza. I don't want people to think that someone is going to get rich by doing this. This money that we're facing into the jobs bill right now, those dollars will go to MnDOT, just like any other type of program, hopefully that we do with some oversight, because oversight is very much important. And we also know that there are some federal dollars that are coming through. And any federal dollars that comes through also goes through MnDOT. MnDOT has the air rights of I-94, which is why this work has to be done in coalition with them. This is a project that has been thought out very much over years before it made its present at the state capitol. And so the $6.2 is just an initial part to do the planning proposal, which is what we do for any projects, for roads and bridges and of sorts. Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, I didn't mean to demean the project, but I was only using what Representative Hornstein said in terms of economic payback. I believe that he used the word repayment. And so I took that to include in my comments something that has been said before, so that was not something that came up new in my comments. This is a very large project. I would dare say that from a transportation project basis, might be one of the largest projects the state has undertaken. So my comments are made in light of the weight of the decision to start this project without a proper consideration in any of the committees that would have jurisdiction, whether it be jobs, transportation, judiciary, public safety, housing, bonding. Whether it has been in cursory form or not, by including it in here, I can assure you that our conversations on the floor will certainly temper the concerns that we have in a larger format. So I'll leave my comments at that.
Thank you, Representative Albright. I do want everyone to know that this bill went through the proper channels, went through committees, but I will let Chair Hornstein speak on that.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. I wanted to let assure Representative Albright that we had two different hearings on this bill. We had an extensive informational hearing in February, and then we had an additional hearing on the legislation was sponsored by Chair Ruth Richardson. And so then we had a hearing on that bill as well as an individual bill. And then we had a third hearing on our comprehensive transportation bill that this was included. So there were three different opportunities for the public to weigh in the Transportation Committee on this legislation.
Okay. Representative Petersburg, do you have another question?
Yes, please. Thank you, Madam Chair. With the last a little bit of discussion, there seems to be some confusion. On the one hand, this is coming through the jobs bill, and yet we talked about being heard in transportation. I don't think it got heard in the jobs bill. And then we talk about, well, this is just economic development and workforce development, and yet all the money is going to be running through the Department of Transportation, as you said. So which is it? Is it transportation issue or is it jobs issue, which becomes very confusing to me. But the other part, and this is to Chair Hornstein as well, which is obviously with this type of infrastructure remodeling and regrowing, the Department of Transportation is going to have to be intimately involved in providing the infrastructure. And it seems to me that with 94 kind of in the crosshairs of being redeveloped and remodeled, that this might be a time for that to happen there. My question is, do you have any communication with the Department of Transportation on when or if that part of I-94 is going to be up for that rebuild? And will this fit in with it? How do we handle that? And by the way, the current projection is $400 million. As you know, it always gets more than that when we start designing it and building it. But there's just a lot of questions and a lot of confusion as to whether or not this really is a transportation issue or if it is a jobs issue when the funding is coming through the Department of Transportation. Food for thought. Thank you.
Representative Nash. So we have Representative Nash and Representative Scott, and then we're going to go to Garofalo.
I believe I asked Chair Hornstein for information on transportation.
Okay. Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Petersburg, MnDOT is very much engaged in this effort. They have been consulted. They are taking a very proactive role, particularly as the project develops, both with the sponsors and the conduit for possible, we don't know yet, but possible federal funding under the bill that is now being considered in Washington. And so there is active engagement. You know, the I-94 rebuild that you referred to, Representative Petersburg, is upon us now. This project will take, you know, several years to complete various reviews and planning. It doesn't just, you know, money isn't appropriated and construction doesn't just start immediately. So, you know, I'm sure that the engineering and the pilings and all of that will be addressed very thoroughly in the planning process and the engineering process. But, you know, to answer your question, I don't think this is related to the immediate I-94 rebuild, which is going on here really in the immediate close immediate future, the next several years.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Hornstein. And to Representative Petersburg, there's now, MnDOT is now have a process that's been going on for a while called Rethinking I-94. And within that planning, they are also looking at the Rondo Land Bridge and the whole rethinking of I-94 into the future. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I wanted to circle back to a question that Representative Albright had asked, and I'm not really sure that we got an answer to. So I think this is probably best addressed to Chair Hornstein, but the funding for this planning, does that link us forever to the completion of this? Because I believe we heard that private funding may happen and outside funding might happen and that there may be federal funds. But let's say none of that happens. What is the state on the hook for long term? Because I would imagine conservative estimates for this project to be completed are hundreds of millions of dollars. And I think it is just a fair question to say, what is the long-term obligation for the state of Minnesota were those other things to not materialize? And I will have a follow-up.
Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Nash. With any project like this, again, whether it's a bridge, it's a road, it's a stadium, different benchmarks that the proposers have to meet. And, again, there's an environmental review, there's engineering review, there are plans that are prepared and evaluated. There's a public engagement process. Again, every single project that, we see, infrastructure project, starts with something like this. And so we're not engaging in a process that's any different than, the types of projects that I had referred to, transit projects as well, wastewater treatment facilities. They all start with this type of effort. Now, you are correct. I mean, it's multi-jurisdictional, certainly within the legislature. There's a likely federal partnership. There is certainly municipal buy-in here. The mayor of St. Paul testified, Mayor Melvin Carter testified at our hearing. I think there is certainly interest in the county and again, private foundations and other funders. So we are just simply initiating a planning process through this grant. And so it doesn't necessarily lock the state into any long-term funding. It is stage by stage by stage. And you are going to have to pass a rigorous set of benchmarks in order to get future funding. So it does not bind the legislature to anything. And what it does bind is public and private sector partnerships to come up with plans that we will quite frankly look at and scrutinize. We have the professionals at MnDOT that will be evaluating those.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hornstein, I certainly understand that there's probably going to be a pretty sophisticated joint powers agreement to get this done. And I remember that from my time as a mayor. But again, I will tell you, I have some fairly substantial reservations regarding the funding of a planning project, because that in essence gives credence to the project moving forward. And it says that the state is behind this. And I rarely, and I would love for you to tell me an example of projects of this magnitude that we paid for the planning and then stopped, because I don't know of one. And I know Representative Hornstein, you and I had some spirited conversations when I had the bill that removed the state from the funding of Southwest Light Rail when we were last in the majority. But my fear is this, and I just wanted to go on record, and I do appreciate you saying that perhaps the state would not have to be on the hook long term, but my fear is we bless this project by doing this planning money, and you begin going down the roads, and a minute ago you mentioned that pilings could actually begin being poured. That's a pretty demonstrative step in the direction of completion, and yet we haven't figured out funding. And that, you know, that's like pouring a basement or a foundation for your home and saying, oh, everything else will just fall in line. It'll all be downhill from there. I'm sure it'll work out. So again, I have grave reservations about this. On top of that, as I understand it, this bill only had the courtesy of one hearing stop. And clearly it's got multiple jurisdictions that should be weighing in on it. It didn't come to the state government, local government. That never darkened the door of that committee. So I just have a lot of reservations on this. And I think that, you know, you can, as we've been pointing out, you can cut deals in the dark of night, but that doesn't mean that our side is going to sit back passively and let this go by without mention. Again, lots of money. I believe committing us to something long term. And we don't even have a defined cost. We don't have a defined number of jobs. This has been told to us in the last few minutes. It's going to be a jobs bill. I would love to hear how many of those you're going to create. But the biggest problem is that I feel that it encumbers us to a long-term funding mechanism that is poorly thought out. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, if I could just respond one more time.
Chair Hornsby.
Representative Nash, I mean, the questions you're answering, that's what we do in a planning process for infrastructure, is to answer the questions that you're raising. And that's number one. Number two, when I talked about piling, I mean, that's many, many, many years away if it happens. So I don't want you to get the impression. I was giving that as an example of one of the roles MnDOT would play, among others, is the actual infrastructure of the bridge itself, but then what happens on top of it, that's a whole other set of community partners. So I want to be clear, that's not happening anytime soon. And the questions you raise are good ones. And that's, again, what any planning and engineering master planning process for a project like this answers.
Thank you. It is a process. Nothing happens overnight. It is a definitely process that happens over years. And we do invest in things like that. We invest in things like PolyMet, you know, and what happens with that? You know, and so this is things that we do at the state level as foundational to get other investors to invest in. It doesn't mean that the state has to take on the full responsibility. With that, Peggy Scott and then Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question dovetails off of Representative Nash's inquiry regarding the number of jobs this is going to create. And Madam Chair, you alluded to that. This is a jobs bill. So if either you or Representative Knorr want to speak to the estimated jobs that will be created throughout this project, I would appreciate it.
Maybe I'll
Madam Chair.
Yes, Chair Knorr.
Thank you, Representative Scott. As far as I know, the initial stage is 1,800 jobs that will be created by this project if it's that moving forward.
Representative Scott.
Madam Chair, and what are those all construction jobs? Are those planning jobs? 1,800 sounds like a lot, and yeah.
Madam Chair.
Chair Knorr.
This is a mixture, you know, in the long term, once the lid is constructed, there'll be additional opportunities to create more jobs. So this is more of a mix of 1,800 jobs to be created by this project.
So, Madam Chair.
Representative Scott.
Thank you. Is that over the lifetime of the entire project if it's seen to fruition? Or is that just this initial planning and what this money is for?
Chair Knorr.
Madam Chair, this is the concept to the creation of the lead process. The long term will be generated through the economic development. There'll be housing, there'll be businesses that are going to be moving on that bridge that will be placed on the I-94. But quite frankly, also it addresses a significant environmental injustice where we know that exists. So this is more about holistic approach to a long-term restoration and connecting people that have been displaced for a long time. So this is much needed. And I do believe this project will create a lot of jobs, which are not, whether directly or indirectly.
Madam Chair.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my question then is, so just for this money that we're talking about right here in front of us right now, how many jobs will that create? Just this portion of the project that we're funding.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this is part of the planning and designing and also doing the community outreach so that this project can move forward. It involves a lot of engineers, a lot of involvement from the department. So I don't have the specific number at this point, but at least I do believe this is the initial planning and development and engaging the community, because we do believe that community input in this process is critical. And the planning process, as we have done in different places, it depends on the work that needs to be done. But immediately, I think this is creating the design, the development, and also the engagement of the community around the Rondo neighborhoods.
All right. Representative Hertas. And then our last speaker would be Representative Garofalo. Representative Hertas.
I'm sorry, I'm on a cell phone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. Well, I just ran some quick numbers, and, you know, the interstate's got 330 feet of right-of-way, and a mile and a half long basically is an area that covers about 60 acres. And if you were to equate that in terms of bridges, that would be the equivalent of building 114 bridges across the Rondo area. And maybe Representative Hornstein may know the cost of a bridge that is more than 330 feet long. But when you take numbers that are projected as has been released about this project, we're talking about more than $1,000 a square foot for a project that eventually will fail and need to be replaced. This will not be permanent. It's not as though it won't require maintenance. This appears to be, excuse me, I appreciate all of the sincere effort that's going into this community and neighborhood, but this is something that happened 60 years ago and doesn't mean we can't talk about making Rondo a better place, but covering over an interstate highway in its entirety for a mile and a half is going to become a 1.5 mile long mural. Mm-hmm. And this is just a disaster. I can't support this in any way. This is a boondoggle that will beyond imagine. And we're talking about years, as we've already heard in testimony, away from being completed. The cost estimates and budgeting is going to be off the charts 5 years, 10 years, 20 years from now. And then to have to replace this. We know bridges have to be replaced every 50 years. I just worked hard to get a bridge done, which couldn't happen anyway. Had to compromise on something less than that. So nice try, but I can't support this at all.
Representative Hertas, you're right. The lifespan for most bridges is 50 years. So we have a lot to do to, you know, to repair a lot of bridges that we have not invested in. You're right about that. And just because we build bridges and in their 50-year lifespan is needs to be, you know, more work needs to be done after that 50 years, does not mean that it is a flop, that it wasn't necessary. It shouldn't have taken place. You know, we're looking into the future. We're looking into a land bridge that we truly believe would not be a flop, but will be a good investment, and a good investment not just for St. Paul, but a good investment for our state. And so I would definitely like to invite folks who have not had an opportunity to know and see and meet those who are leading this effort. There is an event, is it today or tomorrow? I think it was today.
Tomorrow, Madam Chair.
Is it tomorrow? It is an event tomorrow called the Trees of Rondo, where I would like to invite every legislator here who has doubts about how we can move forward, the importance and the value of this, and the connection, the relationship, and the tenacity of of Marvin Anderson and Rondo Folks to show up and just take a tour, listen to them, learn something, and know more about this initiative and the vision that they have for a community like Rondo, like a city like St. Paul, and the benefits of something like a land bridge. And so I will have someone to send this invite out to all the members of the Ways and Means, and my hope that you can spend some time showing up tomorrow to just listen and learn something about this project. With that, I'm going to go to Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, can you hear me okay?
We can hear you just fine.
Thank you. And so either Madam Chair or to the author of the amendment to the amendment, it was stated that the Leadership Tribunal agreed to this. Can you tell me who told you that?
Chair Noor?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think if you look at the agreement, global agreement that came through from the leadership, that was also included in the finance, included the Reconnect Rondo. Hence, we do have the same amendment to make sure that the bill reflects those agreements that were agreed to. Quite frankly, this is about restorative justice, which is much needed, and it was included as part of the global agreement.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Representative Rockwell?
So, Madam Chair, I keep hearing people trying to make the sales pitch for this, and I understand what it is, but first of all, do we have a roll call on this amendment to the amendment?
We don't.
I would like a roll call on the amendment to the amendment, please.
Okay.
And Madam Chair and members, to understand what we have here, a lot of numbers being thrown around. This is the Bermuda Triangle of boondoggles. We're talking about a $500 million project to put a lid on Interstate 94. Okay, this is in no way, shape, or form meritorious or worthy. I would urge members to vote no on this amendment to the amendment. Thank you.
All right, so we have a roll call on the A2 amendment to the amendment. Laura, can you please take the roll?
Cameron?
Yes.
Moran, aye. Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo?
No.
Garofalo, no. Representative Albright?
No.
Albright, no. Representative Becker Finn?
Aye.
Becker Finn, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hassan? Representative Hassan?
Hassan, aye.
Hassan, aye. Representative Hertas?
Hertas, no.
Hertas, no. Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Johnson?
Johnson, no.
Johnson, no. Representative Kreisha?
Kreisha, no.
Kreisha, no. Representative Liebling, excused. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, yes.
Lilly, aye. Representative Mariani, excused. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Miller?
Miller, no.
Miller, no. Representative Nash?
Nash, no.
Nash, no. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
Noor, yes.
Noor, aye. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, no.
O'Neill, no. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Petersburg, no.
Petersburg, no. Representative Pinto?
Pinto, aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Schultz?
Schultz, aye.
Schultz, aye. Representative Scott?
Scott, no.
Scott, no. Representative Sundin.
Sundin, aye.
Sundin, aye. There are 16 ayes and 11 nays.
There have been 16 ayes and 11 nays. The motion prevails. So with that, we are back on the A210221 delete all amendments as amended. Is there any further discussion to the amendments? Okay.
Chair Moran, I apologize. I don't think we've had Chair Nor and Chair Eklund explain the underlying amendment yet.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, Chair Eklund, please explain the underlying amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. This is a summary of the Department of Labor Industry budget and policy proposals included in the Jobs Labor Special Session Omnibus Bill. All base funding continues at current levels. The list below are new budget, general fund, unless otherwise specified, and policy items. Unless otherwise specified, the provisions are effective July 1, 2021. Operating increases for labor standards, apprenticeship, and OSHA. Labor standards first, the bill includes additional funding of $51,000 in FY22 and $101,000 each subsequent fiscal year, which will enable labor standards to continue education outreach activities, plus respond to employees' complaints and investigate allegations of violations at current service levels. Apprenticeship, the apprenticeship unit will receive $276,000 in increased funding each biennium from the Workforce Development Fund to fund an additional full-time equivalent FTE to continue expanded program activities and strategies to grow the program. The position currently funded by an expiring federal grant is critical to Apprenticeship Minnesota's role as a meaningful connector to drive greater participation and inclusion in registered apprenticeship. In OSHA, an operating increase of $1.806 million each biennium will enable Minnesota OSHA, that's from Workers' Comp Fund, to increase the number of safety and health investigators by 9.5 FTE. This increase will help ensure MnOSHA can respond promptly to complaints, conduct inspections, and address workplace safety and health concerns. Nursing and pregnancy workplace accommodations. This was a Representative Cagle bill. Effective January 1, 2022, the bill strengthens the workplace protections for expectant and new parents. It requires nursing and lactating employees to receive paid break time to express breast milk at work and ensure more employees have the right to request and receive needed pregnancy accommodations in the workplace. Bill includes $118,000 in FY22 for outreach and education of employers and employees about the law changes and $34,000 in each of FY23 through FY25 for outreach and compliance activities. Department of Labor Industry Policy Initiatives, Representative Frederick Bill. The bill includes three of the agency's policy proposals, apprenticeship, federal conformity, it conforms with federal regulations 29 CFR 30, which outlines the equal employment opportunity regulations support inclusive workforce behavior and protect against discrimination. Construction Codes Advisory Council membership requires appointees to have expertise in their industry slash occupation and adds an energy member and an accessibility member to the Construction Codes Advisory Council. Child labor data protection. Certain personal data collected about minors in a child labor matter is deemed private, not public. The purpose of this legislative change is to safeguard all minors who enter the workforce in Minnesota by preventing their personal contact information from being released. Contractor recovery fund changes. The bill increases the frequency of payouts from the agency's contractor recovery fund and the amount of funds available to homeowners who have suffered a financial loss due to a licensed contractor's fraudulent, deceptive, or dishonest practices. It provides two yearly payouts instead of one and raises the maximum payout level for each licensed residential building contractor from $300,000 to $500,000. The bill also prohibits expending transfers from the fund outside of its statutory purpose. That was a Mecklen bill. Fee reductions for construction trades. The bill will save the construction industry about $4.5 million in FY22 and 23 by extending fee reductions for licenses, building permits, and plan review services, keeping fees in line with the cost of providing services. Work comp campus technology funding extension. The bill extends information technology funds remaining from the $3 million appropriated in FY20 for Department of Labor Industries Workers' Compensation Modernization Program, Work Comp Campus through FY23. DLI estimates around $700,000 could roll forward into 22. The continued funding will enable DLI to implement changes to Work Comp Campus resulting from stakeholder feedback. Dual Training Pipeline funding appropriates $200,000 annually from the Workforce Development Fund directly to DLI for Dual Training Competency Grant Program. Under current law, this funding is appropriate to the Office of Higher Education for interagency transfer. The grants fund the related instruction component of the Minnesota Dual Training Pipeline Program. Higher Education Omnibus Bill includes several policy changes to the Dual Training Pipeline Program. DLI-related provisions included in the bill, helmets to hard hats, $225,000 in FY22 and FY23 from Workforce Development Funds to the Construction Careers Foundation for Helmets Hard Hats Initiative. Minnesota Virtual Academy, it was a Lizligard bill, $100,000 in FY22 from the Workforce Development Fund for a grant to Independent School District 294 for the Minnesota Virtual Academy's Career Pathway with the Operating Engineers Local 49, leading to eligibility in their apprenticeship program. There's $1 million for a logger safety grant to the department for grants to employers in the logging industry to make safety improvements recommended through an on-site safety survey. Grants up to $25,000 can be used for safety equipment training and tuition reimbursement. The grant receives a one-to-one employer match. A report on the grants is due to the legislature by January 15th, 2023. Sprinklers in public housing buildings, it's a newer bill. Certain existing public housing buildings must install automatic sprinkler systems that comply with the state fire code and state building code and be fully operational by August 1, 2033. Rural events venues, this is a Marquardt bill, places of public accommodation now defined as buildings with occupancy of 100 or more instead of 200 or more. Sprinklers are now required in places of public accommodation, including rural event venues or wedding barns at 300 occupancy or more instead of 100. This change will provide clarity and consistency for the industry and remove an economic hardship without compromising public safety. Continuing education requirements for certified building officials. This is a Mecklen bill and certifies building officials will now be required to take 35 hours of continuing education in a 2-year period instead of 38. And then finally, there's a plumbing license exemption for work on certain commercial equipment. The Baker bill, an Ecolab proposal, the bill provides exemption from licensing requirements for certain individuals servicing or installing a commercial chemical dispensing or servicing or replacing a commercial dishwashing machine. Provides for training insurance and ensures the devices include integrable backflow prevention, excuse me, Madam Chair, and that's the components of the Department of Labor and Industry part of this House File 1, Madam Chair and members.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Eklund. I think,
Madam Chair,
Nord, you have something that you also like to explain within the amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. I just wanted to state that although I'm disappointed with the outcome of the entire bill, this is a good bill. With the amendments, we worked hard almost every single day. Just wanted to thank my colleagues, Chair Eklund, Chair Pratt, and Chair Rerick, the commissioner from DLI, Ms. Robinson, and also the commissioner for DEED, Grove. So with that, Madam Chair, I also wanted to thank the nonpartisan staff who worked diligently and also partisan staff to get us where we are today. This is a good bill because we started with the focus on what is needed in terms of economic development. This bill contains $80 million for economic development revitalization grants and loan guarantee program for eligible projects that are designed to address greatest economic development and redevelopment needs that have arisen in the community surrounding real property since March 15, 2020. We were disappointed that we could not get direct investment to the Twin Cities. We also have $70 million grants, up to $25,000 for small businesses that have been impacted by COVID-19. Preferences given to businesses that did not receive funding from the prior state funding. This is going to go through randomized process. There's also $8 million, a historic investment in childcare, mostly goes to Greater Minnesota through the MIFs, and a portion of that goes through DEED, which is a statewide program. We also provide a new additional $7 million as a technical assistance for small businesses for a statewide program. We also rectified the unfairness in the system and based on equity for the high school students UI and also for the senior program for the Social Security offset. We also included the shared work program and also for the reemployment assistance and other changes within the UI program. The UI changes will be effective July 2022. Madam Chair and members, all in all, we were not able to get most of the workplace benefits, such as the paid family medical leave and sick and safe time, emergency paid leave, all those things that we had included, we were not able to, although we're still hopeful that we will be able to reach a consensus on the safety on the oil refineries, which I think we'll be having more conversation. Madam Chair and members, the Commissioner for DLI and the staff from DEED are here to answer any questions or respond to any inquiries. That's all in our bill. We're ready to answer any questions, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Chair Noor. Are there any questions for Chair Noor or Chair Eggman? All right, seeing no questions, Chair Noor renews his motion to adopt the A21-0221 amendment as amended. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? All opposed?
No.
The motion prevails and the A21-0221 amendment as amended is adopted. Okay, so I want to ask again, because I don't see any hands up. Are there any further discussion to the bill? All right. If there's no further discussion, Chair Norris renews his motion that House File 1, as amended, be recommended for placement on the general register. Ms. Sparkman, please take the roll.
Chair Moran?
Aye.
Moran, aye. Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo? Representative Garofalo? Representative Albright?
Albright, no.
Albright, no. Representative Becker Finn?
Becker Finn, aye.
Becker Finn, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hassan? Representative Hassan?
Hassan, aye.
Hassan, aye. Representative Hertas?
Hertas, no.
Hertas, no. Representative Hornstein?
Hornstein, aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Johnson?
Johnson, no.
Johnson, no. Representative Kreisha?
Kreisha, no.
Kreisha, no. Representative Liebling, excused. Representative Lilly?
Lily, aye.
Lily, aye. Representative Mariani, excused. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Miller?
Miller, no.
Miller, no. Representative Nash?
Nash, no.
Nash, no. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
No, yes.
Noor, aye. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, no.
O'Neill, no. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Petersburg, no.
Petersburg, no. Representative Pinto?
Pinto, aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Schultz, excused. Representative Scott?
No.
Scott, no. Representative Sundin?
Sundin, aye.
Sundin, aye. Representative Garofalo? There are 15 ayes and 10 nays.
So there have been 15 ayes and 0 nays. The motion prevails. House File 1, as amended, is recommended for placement on the General Register. I want to thank you, Chair Noor, Chair Eklund, and also Chair Hornstein. All right, so we're going to move on to our next bill that's on the agenda, which is the Housing Omnibus Bill, House File 4. Chair Hausman, welcome back to the committee. I understand that you have an author's amendment. So the chair will move that House File 4 be recommended for placement on the General Register. Chair Hausman, do you also?
Madam Chair, the underlying bill is just the vehicle bill. There's going to be the next amendment is a delete bill.
Okay. All right. So would you like to move your A21-0225?
I'm not a member of the committee, so.
I would do that. So then I would move the A21-0225 delete everything author's amendment to put the agreement language in front of the committee. Chair Hausman, please tell us about your budget agreement and describe the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The delete all is the negotiated agreement between the House and the Senate, I'm pleased to say. At the earlier conference committee, we had the House and Senate bills before us. And at that time did a walkthrough of the two bills. At that public meeting, there was lots of public testimony in the House and Senate bills. At a subsequent meeting, we had adoption of same and similar language that is in this bill. Unfortunately, as in the previous bill, much of the policy was dropped because in this case, budget becomes the priority. But along the way, we had lots of consultations with stakeholders and housing advocates that we touched base with regularly. And they, on an ongoing basis, gave us advice for the language as it was developing. So that is the kind of the background, just a brief comment about the summary. The joint global target was 10 million over base, all one-time funding. Over the upcoming biennium. The House originally had a 30 million target and the Senate had a zero target, so we met almost halfway. That 10 million is spent in the following way. Again, it's one-time funding. 3.25 million for workforce homeownership program, 2.8 million for the challenge program, 1.75 million for the manufactured home park infrastructure grants, which by the way, are still very affordable housing available. $1 million for the Home Ownership Assistance Fund, $1 million to establish the Local Housing Trust Fund, $200,000 to establish a shelter task force. And then in addition to our $10 million over base, the bill includes $100 million in housing infrastructure bonds. And there's a designation for part of that, $18.333 million for single family homes. We believe that's where you build wealth, and so there's something for that. And then $15 million for manufactured home park acquisition or improvement and infrastructure. The little bit of policy in the bill includes the eviction moratorium off-ramp, which is Article 5. And that, as you all know, we're nearing the end of the moratorium. We want that not to be chaos. We want to make sure we don't have more homeless people, and we want to make sure that landlords' bills are paid. And so the good news is there's a lot of federal money that can accomplish this, but we need a little bit of time to do that. And so the timeline to make certain that those dollars reach the right people takes a little bit of effort. Manufactured home title reform to establish manufactured homes as real property, Article 3.
requiring prorated rent on leases that expire before the end of the month, technical policy changes to Minnesota housing programs, Senate policy changing the state building code, removing requirements for one or two family townhouses to have window clips, and clarifying service animal documentation for residential housing, clarifying language there. So that is a very quick overview. We also have the fiscal analyst, Mr. Savory, and Ms. Mullen, who we're missing a few people because we were added to the agenda so late. None of the Minnesota housing people were able to join us, and one of our house research people wasn't able to join us, but Ms. Mullen is here. And I'm also joined by Representative Howard, vice chair of the committee, who has done an enormous amount of work on the bill and specifically the off-ramp. So he's here, should there be questions too about that.
All right. I want to thank you, Chair Hausman, for that detailed information on your bill. Members, are there any questions on the amendment before we adopt it? Okay, I see here. Okay. Yes, we have plenty of questions. Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I again, I'm very disappointed that this actually got called in the Ways and Means at the 11th and a half hour. But you know, I have been a fairly stark critic of this bill from its inception. In addition to the very bad off ramp for the eviction moratorium, I know others will be talking about that, but I think that that's ultimately going to wind up leaving landlords in the lurch, holding the bag, and could potentially cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars by not even being able to be paid. As I understand it, if a tenant were to leave, let's say next month, and they were to file for the full amount that is due to them, the landlord may not even receive that full amount. That's a bad deal. We've got thousands of individuals and corporations that are our landlords, and this is going to effectively screw them over. But as is one of my principal criticisms of this bill, it does nothing to solve the actual problems surrounding home ownership. My source materials have been criticized by the chair in the past, but I have a different source material that was conducted most recently. Zillow did a fairly lengthy survey and study of what are the impediments to homeownership, and a good number of economists were part of the study. And what we found is that the things that I've been saying, that I've been told are cherry-picked and I'm being the mouthpiece of one Minnesota organization, are being upheld by this Zillow survey that was done by economists. And what they're saying is what I've been saying, that the zoning adds extra costs, that inspection fees add extra costs, that decisions made by municipalities are adding extra costs. And as you've heard me say a number of times, every $1,000 you add to the cost of a home, you are pricing 4,000 potential buyers out of the market. The chair has done nothing to solve this, zero things. In fact, she's denied that the problem even exists. This is a bad bill. It continues to be a bad bill. It's getting worse as time progresses. And the eviction moratorium makes it about as bad a bill as I think you could possibly get for anybody who has tenants. And as I've mentioned in committee before, I have some dear friends who own properties, and I have other friends who are principals at companies that are large landlords, and they are about to get clobbered by this horrible, horrible agreement. And it's all done in the guise of only good things happen out of this, peace, love, unicorns. None of that's going to happen. This is a horrible bill, and landlords are going to take it squarely on the chin. So, I obviously am not the lead on this committee, but I would advocate anybody who has compassion for those people who build
domiciles and apartments that they rent out to people to vote no on this, because those people are going to come up woefully short and they are going to take it on the chin. And that is absolutely unconscionable. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative O'Neill.
Did you want me to respond to any of that first?
Chair, yes, you can respond. Chair Housen.
All of the cities around the state tell us that regulations, codes, and fees add perhaps between 3% and 5% to the cost of a house. The big drivers in the rising housing costs are land costs, labor costs, and construction materials. That continues to be the case in our state, and so I just always remind people of that issue. We have a strong desire to work with three groups that we want to protect as much as possible. One of those is tenants, the other is landlords, and the third is the courts. Because the problem is so big, there will be it will be a messiness just because of the size of the problem. That's why very carefully thinking through this off-ramp became so important to us. But the courts are the third entity that we want to protect in this. The courts are nervous that they simply won't have the staff to help the process of untangling all of this. The good news, as I said, is there is financing available. We have already had $100 million go out the door, and our goal at that point was to have that money go directly to landlords. I think that continues to be a strong voice that we want those bills to be paid, those mortgages, the utilities, et cetera, so that we don't have even more instability in housing.
Okay, Representative O'Neill.
Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, I was just wondering, so if a landlord has a tenant that is unwilling to participate in the process and say they haven't paid for 15 months, what is the recourse for that landlord if the tenant refuses to sign or refuses to give the proper information that's needed for them to recoup that loss of 15 months or more? Can you explain that process? And if that recourse is simply only to evict them and to go to civil court, then can you explain how in the world that they would get money out of or get blood out of a turnip? Because I'm just not understanding how this process works. Can you explain it to us, please? Because I can hear Representative Nash was incredibly frustrated with this off-ramp and the little deference it gave to landlords. Maybe you could just explain the exact process and what you expect to happen when the tenant is not cooperative.
Thank you.
Your housing.
Thank you, Representative. And I'm going to phone a friend. This is when Representative Howard is, I know, on the call too, because he has had an enormous amount to say about a number of the provisions here, including material breach and with guardrails. But we don't want unintended consequences. For the most egregious violations of leases, this bill allows for additional eviction filings to proceed. But I would invite, let me see, I'm just looking to see if I have any further. It seems to me that Representative Howard would be a good person to turn to at this point.
Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So a couple things. As Chair Hausman mentioned, 15 days after enactment, evictions would be over for material breach of lease, egregious situations where a tenant may be putting their neighbors at risk or severely damaging property, et cetera. I realize that's not exactly your question, Representative O'Neill. Then 45 days after that, lease non-renewals are in order for folks that do not qualify for rental assistance. 75 days after enactment, evictions are in order for Minnesotans that do not qualify for rental assistance. And at 105 days, we revert back to pre-COVID landlord-tenant law. And one other clarification, just from what Representative Nash mentioned about tenants that leave before they're able, they leave and then landlords aren't able to collect rental assistance. That's because of the law passed in Congress. We don't have an ability to do that based on how the rental assistance was passed in Congress. If that changes, I think there's bipartisan agreement we should do things to take care of those landlords. But this bill provides peace of mind, a timeline, which is what landlords have been asking for throughout this process.
And on that federal language, there has been continued evolution as states have lobbied their federal representatives. There has been, I think, a little more flexibility written in. So hopefully as this falls into place, that that some of those problems may still be addressed.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I did not hear my answer in any of that. I heard the basic tenets of the timeline, but Chair Houseman, I'm hoping that you can explain very clearly to the public exactly what happens to a landlord who has a tenant who refuses to participate. Is he left without any recourse for repayment of over 15 months of unpaid rent or more? I mean, what is his recourse if the tenant absolutely refuses to participate?
Thank you, Representative. And I think that's why I mentioned that third entity, the courts. The courts know there is going to be a lot of work as disagreements are worked through. And so that's why they're hoping for a sufficient timeline. They worry about their staffing. But there is no question this will be complicated and in some cases messy. And the courts will play a role as well.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm still not hearing any answer whatsoever. So I'm gathering from this conversation that, in fact, a landlord who has a tenant who is unwilling to participate in this program to get repaid for all of that lost rent is just out of luck. I mean, maybe they could take them to civil court. They could sue them. And guess what happens then? Absolutely nothing. If that person has no means, then there is no means for anything to be collected in. You know, I'm just at a loss. So you've got folks that have just refused to pay for months upon months upon months, as much as 15 months. They've refused to participate in the rental support through this program. And the landlord could be left holding the bag with absolutely no recourse. That's what I'm hearing. I'm not hearing anything to the contrary to that. I mean, sure, they could go to civil court possibly and sue. And that landlord could even win. And then what? How does that landlord even collect from a tenant after they've gone? You know, I've been in situations where I've been with a party where they won and they haven't collected. Well, they collected $25 on $10,000 because that's what happens is you just get left holding the bag. Those judgments mean literally nothing. So I'm wondering one last time, is there any way for a landlord to apply without the tenant's agreement and signature and actually collect the back rent? There is, or is there no recourse whatsoever?
Madam Chair?
I don't know. Yes, who is that speaking?
This is Representative Howard, Madam Chair.
Representative Howard.
So to answer that question, Representative O'Neill, again, because of the law that Congress passed, both the tenant and the landlord do need to be a part of the process to apply for Rent Help MN, just because of the information that's needed from both parties. There are some counties that have received resources. There's something called the Zero Balance Project. I believe it's Hennepin County, a few others in the metro area, that does have an ability for landlords to apply directly. So there are some resources, but again, our hands are tied somewhat by what Congress passed and some of the strings that are attached to the rental assistance that's coming our way from the federal government.
Okay, Representative O'Neill.
So I think we just gave a lot of understanding to the public at what Representative Nash was getting at and why he feels like landlords could be holding the bag and out hundreds, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I believe that's why the Multi-Housing Association is opposed to this off-ramp, because there was a foreseeable possibility for that landlord to really be out tens of thousands, if not more. So this is really unfortunate. And I've heard to the contrary that that the interpretation of the federal regulations are not being understood correctly. So I hope that that's true. I hope that either Congress changes their mind or has a clarification, or that we're just understanding that rule incorrectly, because that's just egregious to think that a landlord's had no recourse whatsoever over the course of these months and then be left completely holding the bag without a single penny because the tenant was uncooperative. It's just really sad. I think that this will be a ripple effect that we are not going to really appreciate right now.
The other side of this is how much money is available and how much has already gone out. $100 million in housing assistance has already gone out to all of those landlords. All over the state, the challenge is great. We have an additional over $500 million, and all we're saying is we want the time in as orderly a way as we can to get that to all of the landlords. That's what we have in mind to do, over $500 million more dollars to go to landlords to pay their bills.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. I'm done. I think this well is dry. Thank you so much.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hausman, were you in on the, was the Multi-Housing Association in on negotiations on this bill, the final product?
Representative Hausman.
Just as other stakeholders and housing advocates were, they certainly gave testimony, they wrote letters, but they were not involved to any more extent than any other stakeholder or other homes for all advocates, for example. Everyone had the opportunity to provide testimony, to provide written advice, and to be part of the conversation.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so basically what we have here is a deal that was negotiated without final input from stakeholders who are experts in this particular subject matter. So we have people that represent the landlords that are getting just a horrifically horrible deal here. I mean, this is sticking it to landlords, and this is telling tenants, hey, come to Minnesota, you can rent for free. And to say that the Biden bucks are going to try to bail out these landlords, the system is broken, and you guys aren't doing anything to break or to fix the system that's supposed to be getting the money out the door to these landlords that apply. So it's as I understand it, the software, first of all, it's a simple fix because they're having a hard time finding a way to match up the landlord with the property and with the tenant. And that when we do the rental, the certificates of rent paid every year, when we fill those out, there's a property ID number that identifies and associates and brings together the tenant and the landlord under one common identifier. That's all that has to be plugged into this system, in my opinion. So spend a little bit money fixing the system instead of elongating the amount of time that landlords are going to be able to receive these Biden bucks, and speed up the process so it actually gets out the door, right? And there is no way. Representative O'Neill was spot on. There's nothing in this language that would prevent a tenant from moving out of their property tomorrow and sticking the landlord with 15 months of unpaid rent. There's nothing in this deal that prevents that from happening. Nothing. Don't throw the federal government under the bus. Governor Wallace doubled down on this. This is his doing.
This
is one of the worst pieces of legislation I've seen in my time, my 13 years in the legislature. It is the most unbalanced, nonsensical, unfair, there aren't enough words in my vocabulary, I guess, to describe how rotten of a deal this is. And so I don't know if Chair Howard has anything to add to that, or Chair Hausman.
Well, I would just simply say
Representative Hausman.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I would just simply say this is the negotiated agreement between the House and the Republican majority in the Senate. They will all be voting for this bill. Representative Scott mentioned one stakeholder, Minnesota Multi-Housing, who represents landlords, not all of the landlords, but some of the landlords. There are many, many other stakeholders who are affected at this particular point. And the housing advocates, I would say dozens of groups and thousands of people, including faith groups, have been active stakeholders in this. They're making the case for the need for a very, very carefully thought through off-ramp to protect the most vulnerable people in our state. That's what we're trying to do.
So members, we're starting to get ready to go back to the floor. So we got notification that will be happening soon. So Representative Scott, I'll come back to you. Don't worry.
Madam Chair, real quickly, Madam Chair.
I'm going to come back to you. Just hold on a second. I'm just going to say I'm going to come back to you. And then we have Representative Johnson, Representative Albright. And if Garofalo is able to reconnect, we'll do that. So Representative Scott, back to you.
So thank you, Madam Chair. Are we on the adoption of the DE amendment?
We are. We're on the A21-0225 amendment.
And Madam Chair, is it appropriate to make a motion at this point to lay this on the table?
Is it appropriate or are you making the motion?
I'm making the motion if it's in order.
I believe it is in order. So the motion is to lay the A21-0225 on the table.
And I'd like a roll call, please.
A roll call. There's a roll call and the motion is not debatable. So the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Moran, excused. Vice Chair Olson?
No.
Olson, no. Representative Garofalo, excused. Representative Albright?
Albright, yes.
Albright, aye. Representative Becker Finn? Representative Becker Finn? Representative Bernardi?
No.
Bernardi, no. Representative Eklund?
No.
Eklund, no. Representative Hansen? Representative Hansen? Representative Hassan?
No.
Hassan, no. Representative Hertas?
Hertas, yes.
Hertas, aye.
Hansen, yes.
Hansen?
Yes.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hornstein?
Hornstein, no.
Ulrich Hansen.
Hornstein, no. Representative Johnson?
Johnson, aye.
Johnson, aye. Representative Kreisha?
Kreisha, aye.
Kreisha, aye. Representative Liebling, excused. Representative Lilly? Representative Lilly?
Lilly, no.
Lilly, no. Representative Mariani, excused. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, no.
Marquardt, no. Representative Miller?
Miller, aye.
Miller, aye. Representative Nash?
Nash, aye.
Nash, aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, no.
Nelson, no. Representative Noor?
Noor, no.
Noor, no. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, aye.
O'Neill, aye. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, no.
Pawlowski, no. Representative Petersburg?
Petersburg, aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Pinto?
Pinto, no.
Pinto, no. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Representative Schultz, excused. Representative Scott?
Scott, aye.
Scott, aye. Representative Sundin?
Sundin, aye.
Sundin, aye. Representative Becker Finn?
And Ms. Sparkman, will you recall Hansen as well, please?
Representative Hansen?
Hansen changes from aye to no.
Representative Hansen, no.
Sundin changes from aye to no.
Representative Sundin, no. There are 10 ayes and 13 nays.
There being 10 ayes and 13 nays, the motion does not prevail. So we are on the A21-0225 amendment. And as I mentioned, we'll do the folks that had their hands up before we move on.
Madam Chair?
Yep, Representative Scott.
Thank you. Do I still have the floor or the...
Yes, you can go, and then we still have Representative Johnson and Representative Albright as well.
And I'll just finish with this. If you vote in favor of this language, contract law means nothing to you. You think people you think eviction should never happen, and you think people should live for free. That's what this bill basically is saying. I'm just going to drop it there. I mean, you can embellish and make excuses all day long with the pandemic, but the way this bill was brought together, it is one-sided, and it's going to cause housing providers to go into foreclosure with their buildings and maybe file bankruptcy. Now, if that's what you want, go ahead and vote yes on the bill, but I'll be a no. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Well, Chair Representative Hausman, I have a couple minor questions on this bill. First of all, I want to explain what's going on in my district. As deacon of my church, one of the things that I deal with is those who are in crisis, whether it's got the food or housing. And I'm currently working with a couple with three small children, all in diapers yet, trying to find them housing. I've called every single rental unit available in my district. They're not available. But I also talked to them about what percentage of their tenants aren't paying their rent. And it's a small percentage. You talk to them, it's the average, what it normally goes to. But just instead of being three, 4 months behind, they're 14, 15 months behind. And they cannot have them evicted. And some of them have jobs. They're working, but not paying their rent. I'm just wondering if there's anything in this bill.
Oh, she did.
If there's anything in this bill that would find somebody who's actually working, can pay their rent, but refusing to because they know that nothing can happen at this time. Because we have people that actually need these apartments that are willing to want to pay for them, but they're not available because I'll just call them what they are, deadbeats refusing to pay their obligations. Is there any fines that if they have work and can pay this and they are not?
Chair Hausman.
Madam Chair, I think you suggested maybe you're time bound. Maybe we should have everyone get their comments on and then I would respond in closing just to save a little bit of time.
That sounds like a good idea, Chair Hausman. So, Representative Johnson, do you have some further questions you mentioned?
Well, I will end right there, but I do have a lot of concerns on this bill. I don't think it's going to help. The average that we're hearing for those not paying rent is the normal. No more than the normal people that, like I said, are deadbeats that just don't pay their rent. But unfortunately, because we can't do the eviction process, they know that means they don't even try to pay their rent when they get that notice because they're not getting the notices anymore. We have good people that cannot find a place to stay. One other thing they mentioned, just that 3% increase because the cities are saying that that's on a $250,000 home, which there is none of them anymore. They're 400,000 or better to build a home because of the material cost. But at 250,000, that's almost $8,000 in what the city fees last when we figure it out over the life of the mortgage for that home. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, I'll be making the close for the GOP committee.
Okay, great. Thanks, Representative Albright. Go ahead.
This pales in comparison to some of the other proposals that we've seen over the last 2 days. It's a bit of an epiphany for me. It's reminiscent of most other very sloppy work that's been done by this majority over the last two or three months, literally, where we've gotten literally nothing done. End of session. You know, I think some have actually come to call this the Operation Secret session because no one knows anything that's going on. Representative Howard made some comments to the effect of, you know, well, that's just, you know, that they can take it to court. If they even win, as Representative Scott said, you know, they'll end up paying very little in recourse. And we have landlords that are out, you know, millions of dollars in back rent. This project and this proposal does nothing to assure them of any recourse opportunity for them should those renters remove themselves from the premise without paying up for the stay that they've had. And candidly, we talk very often about this being an exit strategy from the eviction moratorium. I would say that the governor of this state missed the exit on this a long time ago. And if he had had his sense about him, he would have done this about 6 or 8 months ago when this emergency crisis was truly all over. And so not that we recognize, you know, the inability of the majority to do their job, but they are in consort with the governor on this. And I lay the blame for landlords that will ultimately have to file bankruptcy, sell their properties, and really ruin and destroy their livelihoods because of the inability of this majority and that governor to get their act together. Candidly, this bill does nothing to make home ownership and home construction more affordable. It creates an off-ramp, which leaves property owners in the lurch until June of 22 without any guarantee that they receive past due rent for what they're owned. And I would urge everyone to vote no. And if this is on final passage, but even if it is not, I would ask for a roll call.
Okay. A roll call having been requested on the A21-0225 amendment, which is the DE amendment to the bill, which is essentially the substance. So with that, we will take the roll on the A21-0225 amendment.
Chair Moran excused. Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo excused. Representative Albright?
Albright, no.
Albright, no. Representative Becker-Finn excused. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hassan?
Hassan, aye.
Hassan, aye. Representative Hertas? Representative
no.
Hertas?
Hertas, no.
No. Representative Hornstein?
Hornstein, aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Johnson? Representative Johnson? Representative Kreisha?
Kreisha, no.
Kreisha, no. Representative Liebling, excused. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Mariani, excused. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Miller?
Miller, no.
Miller, no. Representative Nash?
Nash, no.
Nash, no. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, no.
O'Neill, no. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Petersburg, no.
Petersburg, no. Representative Pinto?
Pinto, aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Schultz, excused. Representative Scott? Representative Scott?
No.
Scott, no. Representative Sundin?
Sundin, aye.
Sundin, aye. Representative Johnson?
Johnson, no.
Johnson, no. There are 13 ayes and 10 nays.
There being 13 ayes and 10 nays, the motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. So further discussion to the bill as amended. Seeing no further discussion, I renew my motion that House File 4 as amended be recommended for placement on the general register. Ms. Sparkman, please take the roll.
Chair Moran excused. Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo excused. Representative Albright?
Albright, no.
Albright, no. Representative Becker Finn excused. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hassan?
Hassan, aye.
Hassan, aye. Representative Hertas?
No.
Hertas, no. Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Johnson?
Johnson, no.
Johnson, no. Representative Kreisha?
Kreisha, no.
Kreisha, no. Representative Liebling, excused. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Mariani, excused. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Miller?
Miller, no.
Miller, no. Representative Nash?
Nash, no.
Nash, no. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative O'Neill?
Hey, we'll see what goes on there. I might jump in on that one with the guys.
O'Neill, no.
O'Neill, no. Representative Pulowski?
Pulowski, aye.
Pulowski, aye. Representative Petersburg? Representative Petersburg?
Petersburg, no.
Petersburg, no. Representative Pinto?
Pinto, aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Schultz, excuse.
I'll
Representative Scott?
Scott, no.
Scott, no. Representative Sundin?
Sundin, aye.
Sundin, aye. There are 13 ayes and 10 nays.
There being 13 ayes and 10 nays, the motion prevails and House File 4, as amended, is recommended for placement on the general register. So thank you, Chair Hausman, for being here for the committee, and thank you for your work on this bill. So members,
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Members, that concludes our agenda for the day. We'll meet again tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. or the call of the chair, to schedule additional hearings as language agreements are finalized for other bills. So please watch your email for more details. And with that, we are adjourned.